Welcome back, everyone, to the old CPB, the Chaos Ball Podcast. We are here. It's been 2 weeks. What are the Mariners doing? They're doing it. They're doing the thing. They are doing the let's make a run of it and then miss the playoffs by a game or two in the last week of the season. They're really doing it. I didn't pod last week. I was just letting things breathe. Things were going well. I didn't want to throw a little podcast in here while they were on kind of a hot streak, but they've cooled off since then a little bit, just a little bit. But I think late August, at the end of last month, when they were scuffling and things were bleak, they had the option, they had the choice. What do you want to do? And I presented them with that choice. I said they could either just roll over and die, which would be the easy option, and the least painful option. They roll over and die, and they miss the playoffs by now, by the 19th, 20th, 21st. Around this time is about when they could have been out. But no, what I said was probably going to happen is they're going to make a valiant effort, and they're just going to come up just short. And they're in line to do that perfectly. Now, they're still in it. They're still going to be in it for at least another week, probably. They are two games back of the Tigers, the red-hot Tigers, good Lord, and the Twins. The Twins are 4-6 in their last 10. The Tigers are 8-2 in their last 10. Mariners are 6-4 in their last 10. They have been playing better baseball recently, that's for sure. And then the Red Sox are a game and a half behind the Mariners, and then the Rays are 5.5 back, or 3.5 back of the Mariners. It's really the Tigers, Twins, Mariners for that last spot right now, unless the Red Sox go on a crazy win streak or something. And then Royals are two games ahead of the Tigers and the Twins, so it's the race of the Central is huge right now. The Guardians locked up that division already. But it's the wild card. We could be seeing, you know, if the Orioles keep losing, the Orioles haven't clinched yet. Theoretically, we could be seeing four AL teams in the playoff, AL Central teams in the playoff would be freaking awesome. But no, the Mariners are outside looking in still. The division's going to be there until they play the Astros. Like, they're 4.5 games back to the Astros. The Astros are currently playing tonight while I'm recording this. So if the Astros lose, they could be four back by the time this podcast comes out. And, I mean, if the Mariners go into the Astros series 4 to 5 games out, they still could theoretically win the division if they go into the Astros series 3 games out and sweep them and they're tied. That could be real interesting, but I just don't see that happening. So I think the wild card is, they're technically still alive in both the wild card and the division, but the wild card is where that's going to have to happen. And they do not have the tiebreaker with the Twins. And I don't think the Tigers have the tiebreaker with the Twins either. So if it's a tie, the Twins, with either of these teams, the Twins will go through. I don't know what the Mariners' tiebreaker is with the Tigers, but I'm looking right now. They do not have the tiebreaker with the Tigers. Oh, that was, yep, that was that time last month when they lost 5 of 6 to the Tigers. But looking at that now, the Tigers are freaking red hot. They've been amazing in September. But they're doing it. Like I said, the Mariners are doing it. They're gearing all of us up for maximum pain. I mean, I'm prepared for it. I think everyone is prepared for it, no matter what happens. I've fully expected them to miss the playoffs for weeks. I fully expected them to make it as close as possible. The only thing that's going to be extra tough this season is that 86 games, 86 wins, probably, that might get them into the playoffs this season. And in past seasons, that was not the case. And that's what's going to sting if they end up with like 84 wins when they could have been on par with what they've done the last couple of years and win like 88, 89. 89 games gets them into the playoffs. Like, 89 games might win them the division. Like, the Astros have 82 right now. The Astros might not even get to 87 and win the division still. And the Mariners are at 78 wins right now. Just really unfortunate. But today I will be talking about, somewhat, about the Seattle Mariners. I mean, the offense has been playing better, for sure. The offense has been playing much better. I have some numbers to throw at you. The midseason acquisitions have been pretty solid. Talk a little bit about the Yankees series and some of the base running issues they've had this season and recently, and just riff and then get out of here. And still just, we're still waiting for the day they're eliminated and or make the playoffs again. It's not out of the realm of possibility that they can make the playoffs this season, but it's looking increasingly unlikely that they'll do so. But before I get into the Mariners, the Modesto Nuts have won the California League again. Back-to-back champions for the Modesto Nuts. The Modesto Nuts are a wagon. I talked about them earlier in the year. They ended up winning the league. Hell yeah. Shout out to the Nuts. And that's it. That's the minor league update. But the Mariners just, they split a series with the Padres last week. They took 3 of 4 from the Rangers at home. And they just lost 2 of 3 to the Yankees. Got trounced, and on Tuesday, Brian Wu had his worst start of the year, comfortably his worst start at T-Mobile. He'd been insanely good at T-Mobile all year. Felt like he was kind of due to have a start like this, and it's against a really solid lineup too. So it's really unfortunate that happened. But I mean, the Mariners scored 2 runs, probably could have scored a little bit more, but you're not going to win that many games scoring 2 runs, as we've learned. And then the game on Wednesday was awful, terrible, awful game. And as you know, if you don't know, I've been listening to these games on radio. I've been watching clips on Twitter while listening to games on radio, but I've been listening on radio exclusively for 2.5 weeks now. It's been awesome. And they've been playing really good ball, so I just haven't really been disrupting it. Rick Riz is phenomenal. So hearing him describe some of these plays is, I like know what happens, but then I have to race to Twitter to watch. And I'll talk about it more later, but the Julio thing, that it didn't lose them the game, but it pushed the nail almost all the way in to the coffin in that game. And that was an excruciating loss after an excruciating 8 innings. And then a little bit optimistic going into the ninth. And then optimistic up until right at the end in the bottom of the 10th when they ended up losing that game. And that's just not a game you can lose when you have to win every game going forward. It's just simply not a game you can afford to lose. Thankfully, they salvaged a little bit from the series against the Yanks on Thursday. Logan Gilbert, amazing start, reached 200 Ks in the season. I think ninth the Mariner to do it, I think Mariners PR said. Because Luis Castillo did it last year, Robbie Ray did it in 2022, then I think James Paxton did it in like 2019, 2018. I know Felix had done this multiple times, Randy Johnson did it, Freddie Garcia did it, I think. I don't have the list in front of me, but I know I'm missing a couple. But it's 200K seasons for Logan Gilbert in what is definitely his best year as a Mariner and probably the best pitcher on the Mariners this season. Just a phenomenal year. He will get Cy Young votes. He's not going to win it. Scooble is going to win that award, but Logan Gilbert will, and rightfully so, get Cy Young votes this year. He's been phenomenal. Shoved today. Absolutely shoved. And had a little bit of shit housery against the Yankees today, too. He was chatting big shit with his face. He doesn't really chat shit with his mouth, but he has kind of a death stare up there, and he's such a large, imposing big skeleton man, so I would not want him looking at me like that. But now they go to the Rangers and the Astros. They go to Texas in what is the pivotal road trip of the season. You know, if they win all 6 of these games, they could theoretically make the playoffs. And then they have a homestand against the A's, 3-game set to end the year. All division opponents down the stretch here. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I'm not going to try to predict anything. I'm just taking the season as it rolls in through the words of the great Rick Riz, and that is that. So we have almost reached a month since Scott Servais was fired, was sacked, and Dan Wilson was hired And the hitting coach, Jared DeHart, was let go, and Edgar Martinez was brought on as the hitting coach. And since August 23rd, which was the first game in charge, so again, it's the 20th, we're almost at a month here, the offense has been better, and they've been playing good ball. And how much of that is attributed to these, like Dan Wilson and Edgar, how much is attributed to small sample, and they've just improved and been playing better ball? Because, you know, any given point in the season, you can pick a couple weeks where they've played really well. You can pick a couple weeks where they were awful. And I think part of this is they were so bad heading into Scott Service's firing. Like, the first 3 weeks of August were awful. They were terrible. Besides the Mets sweep, it was just a terrible experience. The road trip from hell in Detroit, Pittsburgh, and LA, where they took one game of a possible nine, it was the final nail in the coffin for Scott, and it was a low point in the season. And so I think firing him appeased many fans. It didn't necessarily appease me, but I didn't disagree with the move. And some fan service in promoting Dan Wilson and Edgar, the head coach, or I guess manager and hitting coach. And I think if they went on to just be kind of lifeless and miss the playoffs by the second week of September, I don't know if anyone would have really batted an eye at that. I don't know if anyone would have credited Dan Wilson and Edgar, or like discredited them, because it's such a small sample. But since they've been playing much better, I think it's way easier to be like, yeah, they made a difference. This has made a difference for sure. I don't know. But the numbers are, since August 23rd, they're 7th in runs scored in baseball. They lead the league in walk rate at 11.2% over that time. They're only striking out 24.3% of the time as a team, which is still the 10th worst, but certainly an improvement. That is an improvement from where they were at. They're 3rd in WRC Plus as a team with 126. Over that span, they're slashing 251, 351, 414. That 765 OPS is 5th in baseball over that span. And again, is this small sample, or are they just hitting great? And are these like improvements that have been made because Scott and Jared DeHart are not here? Again, it's hard to say. I'm inclined to believe that Edgar at least has helped the offense somewhat, and some of this can be attributed to him. I don't think he's done nothing, obviously, since his time there. I think the coaching changes, like in manager and hitting coach, can just give you a bump. I think in all sports that sometimes happens. I think leading to a coach or manager's firing, again, is often the low point of a season. Even if the players really like the manager and they've had good times in the past, like the Mariners the past couple years, I feel like everything can sour so quickly in a locker room. And then letting a guy go, I think, can often just kind of be that breath of fresh air that reinvigorates the team a little bit, for at least a little while, for at least like a couple weeks or a few games, depending on the sport that you're in. I think a new coach bump can always just kind of put a jolt in a team. Like, hey, we reset. We're going to hard reset in the middle of the season. And so it could be some of that. But I think Edgar has probably helped a little bit. I mean, people pulled numbers from when he was the hitting coach a few years ago with Scott as the manager, and they were a pretty good offensive team in that time. Vastly different personnel in the lineup. That's obviously something you need to consider. But if someone knows a thing or two about hitting, it's Edgar Martinez. And I think if someone also knows how to impart a, like, don't think too much, just go up there and trust yourself and hit, I think it's Edgar Martinez. He doesn't seem like the type to overcomplicate things. He doesn't seem like the type to talk a guy's ear off about strategy going into a set game or series with the hitters. And it seemed a little bit like Scott and or Jared DeHart had done that. It seemed like they threw a lot of stuff at the hitters. It was talked about by the players and some of the beat writers that there was chatter in the locker room kind of about making the hitters think too much, getting in their own head. I mean, I think that came from the front office a little bit in the offseason and from the fans and everything, there was such an emphasis on cutting down on the strikeouts, and that was the boogeyman for why their offense was so bad last year, and it was definitely a reason, but I've talked a lot about that's not the only reason they were bad. They were just bad in most aspects, and they were for most of this year. And I think when you talk about it so much, it draws so much more attention to it, and it puts so much pressure on these hitters, and they're thinking about, I can't strike out, I can't strike out. And when you're thinking about that, I think you strike out a lot more than you would. So I think maybe what Dan Wilson and Edgar have done is take some of the pressure off the hitters and given them less direction and just kind of had the hitters go up there and just hit. Not think a whole lot, just hit. I think they're just getting the dudes to just relax and play ball. It felt like in August especially, there was so much more pressure on Scott and the team to perform. I think Scott knew his job was in trouble. And I can't imagine he was the jolliest of fellows in August. And when your boss at work is not in a great mood, you're not going to be in a great mood. So I think the vibes part of it is definitely something you need to factor in. But the point is, they've been a very solid, contending worthy offense for a month now, which still small sample, but it's just been a marked improvement. And the midseason acquisitions have been really solid. I think that's also part of it, is that the midseason acquisitions had a little bit of time for the rest of July to settle in, and then August hit the ground running, and there were some struggles there, but overall they've been really solid for the Mariners. Robles included, he was a midseason acquisition, the best one, really. He cooled off slightly in August, but has had a insanely hot September for the team, and he has a 159 WRC plus as a Mariner this year, which is still just insane. The Victor Robles 2023 Mariners just experience, I guess, has been surreal. Every day I can't believe he's been doing this. And if they miss the playoffs, I think we're going to miss out on a potentially epic playoff run from this team centered around Victor Robles. Could you imagine what Victor Robles would conjure up in the playoffs for this team? He's not only been good, but he's just so chaotic. Like, can you imagine him on a like playing well for a playoff team? Insane. It would be awesome. It would be phenomenal. I mean, he was on that 2019 Nationals team, and I think he won like the Gold Glove that year. He had always been solid in center field. I can't say I remember if he was good for this team in the playoffs. I know he was playing. That's all I know. I think that's what I'm going to miss out on most if they miss the playoffs this year, is the Victor Robles October experience, because, man, that would be electric. And then Justin Turner, another midseason acquisition, a deadline acquisition. He's a 130 WRC plus as a Mariner, has just come in and done precisely what they've wanted him to do. He is a professional. He is, I think, the oldest position player in baseball, and he looks the part in terms of just the at-bats he puts in, day out. I think that's also something you have to consider with the offense and some of the guys coming along, like Julio a little bit, and like Luke Raley's had a really good second half. I think some of it is probably having Justin Turner available to you when you're at work to just kind of poke and prod with questions about hitting. That can't hurt either. The guy knows a thing or two about swinging the bat in the big leagues, and he's been great. He's been everything they could ask for, and they really didn't give up much to get him at all. And then Randy Rosarena has a 123 WRC plus as a Mariner as well, and it's been a full Mariners experience for Randy. I think I'm glad a lot of people realize just how special and unique of a player he is now that he's a Mariner. I think a lot of people on the West Coast probably didn't watch him much as a Ray, and I don't blame them one bit for not watching him. And many people just remember him for his 2020 playoffs, and you should. You definitely should. But he's just such a one-of-one player. I mean, and you take the good with the bad. You just have to with a player like that, because you saw in that home run that he hit when he made Jonah Heim cry like a little baby, he steps out of the box mid-pitch fairly often. He did it three straight times and then socked a sick dinger. And boy, he let everyone in the stadium know how cool he is after he hit that dinger. And it's like, people are going to get mad at him for stepping out of the box. He's going to strike out. Maybe he'll make a mistake or two here and there. But you take that, some of that bad with the good. And the stepping out three straight times and then just crushing a ball into the seats is Randy Rosarena to a T. He is electric and he's been really solid and a very solid pickup for the Mariners. And I am just excited, as excited as I can be, to look forward to next year at this moment with this outfield with Randy included in it. That's more than you could ask for three midseason bat acquisitions. Like, and it also comes with Luke Raley again, like I said, having a phenomenal second half and an overall this great year. Like, I think his August and September WRC plus is like 200 right now. Julio's had a way better second half, and since the coaching changes has put up a 148 WRC plus with what I think is the most important metric in this, 11% walk rate and 20% K rate. Multiple pulled home runs, pulled hard hit fly balls, man. That's the key. Very encouraging signs for Julio. Maybe Edgar has unlocked something in him, but Julio has also, to be fair, done this the past 2 years and just come alive late in the year. So it's, again, we don't know exactly who to attribute with all this. Mainly, we can just say, hey, Julio, you've been good. And all this could just be coming too late, unfortunately. Again, they've been a really good team. The offense has been great. The pitching has not really missed a step this month. The bullpen had a tough August for sure, but they've been way better as of late. And yet, they're still two games out of a wild card spot. They're still on the outside looking in. It might just be too little too late. And it hasn't really been little. Again, this offense has been great. It's just looking increasingly unlikely they'll miss the playoffs. And the bullpen, yeah, the bullpen is, it looks like they have, it's finally kind of been figured out. It's taken long enough. The Jimmy Garcia acquisition did not work out at all. So all of those two great trades, and Randy and Justin Turner, have really helped. It's balanced out a little bit by the Jimmy acquisition just not working out one bit. He's barely pitched, and when he did pitch, he wasn't very good. And that is just the nature of acquiring a reliever at the deadline. I loved the move, and it just didn't work out. And that is just how it goes sometimes when you trade for a reliever at the deadline, no matter how good they are. That can always happen. But JT Chargois has been phenomenal for them. He's been a super stable middle relief arm since coming back to Seattle. And that's kind of exactly what they've needed, is just a stable, big league quality middle relief arm. That's what they've missed this year, because they've had to push some of those normal solid middle relief guys to more higher leverage roles to fill in for injuries of that bullpen. But now the back of the bullpen for the past couple weeks for Dan Wilson, it's been obviously Andrés Muñoz as the number one horse, and he's continued his phenomenal year. And then it's been Troy Taylor and Colin Snyder. Colin Snyder, pitching lab success of the year for the Seattle Mariners for sure, just been just a delight for months now. And Troy Taylor, who came up recently, been in the system for a while. The Mariners actually drafted him twice, 2 years in a row, because they just wanted him. And it's been really fun. It's been really fun to watch. And it's, again, it's something I don't want to just look straight to 2025 yet. But it looks like he's going to be a pretty large asset for the bullpen in 2025. And all three of those guys now have been great for this team. And that's kind of been the back of the bullpen. Unfortunately, with the injuries, that's just had to happen. Like Matt Brash and Gregory Santos. I mean, Gregory Santos pitched more than Matt Brash. But for all intents and purposes, he really hasn't pitched this year. The expectation was this guy is high leverage, back of the bullpen, can save a game if you need, and that just hasn't been a thing this year. So he's another guy they hopefully need to just get healthy for next year and hope that he can remain as good as he has the past couple of years going into next season. But they finally figured out the bullpen. It's mid-September, and the bullpen unfortunately just cost them too many games earlier in the season. And really, it's still been, like, if you go strictly by ERA and some other things, it's still been like a top 10 bullpen in baseball. It's still been a solid bullpen. But with the offense as bad as it's been for most of the year, you need, like, that's why the Mariners have had made the playoffs and been largely pretty competitive the past couple seasons with a subpar offense. It's the starters, but then more importantly, it's the bullpen that needs to take the reins from the starters and actually win them games. And they were quite good at that the past few years. And this year they were not quite as good. And when you don't have like a near perfect bullpen, that's going to cost you games. It shouldn't cost you games. You should be able to have a good enough offense to score a lot of runs to give the bullpen cushion more often than not. But that's just not how this team is constructed. And so when you have a bullpen who is not as elite as years past, it hurts you a lot. And that is just, that's an issue with the team building. And some of the stable bullpen arms the Mariners have had the past couple seasons just did not have good years this year. But Troy Taylor, Colin Snyder, Andrés Muñoz, and then, I mean, largely, like, Trent Thornton's had a good year. I think Austin DeVoth, on the whole, has had a solid year. Like I said, Sharkwa has been great since the addition. Just that also is kind of too little too late. It's something they needed a stable bullpen about 2 months ago. And the only stable guy that's been here the entire season is Andrés Muñoz. He's been really the most consistent and dominant guy in the bullpen, which is not surprising. It's not like super abnormal to figure out your bullpen a little bit in September, like especially when you're heading into October, but you have to get to October for that to matter at all. So there's that. That's that important little wrinkle in there. But again, they figured out the bullpen. The offense is coming along. The starting pitching has still been great. All of it, again, might be too little too late, and they're setting us up on a silver platter to miss playoffs on like the last couple days of the season again. They have done that, what feels like in the past decade, they've done it 7 times out of 10, which I don't know if it's true. I'd have to fact check that for sure, but it feels like that, doesn't it? Doesn't it feel they made the playoffs once and every other competitive team has missed the playoffs in the last week of the season? It's just kind of what they do, unfortunately. Maybe it's the stamp of a Jerry DePoto run organization is that, which is not a good stamp to have. Just barely, almost good enough is what this team has been this season and in the past few years. Just unfortunate. Wasting a lot of primes and cheap years of the pitching you have worked so hard to develop and have succeeded in developing. It's just wildly unfortunate. But I'm done talking about team as a whole. Let's talk about some base running, shall we? Some Toot Bland, some throw it out on the base path looking like a nincompoop plays. They've had too many of them this year. It's felt like a year of the Toot Bland for the Seattle Mariners. It's felt like a really awful, awful, not fundamentally sound base running year for this team. And unfortunately, Julio Rodriguez has been at the center of many of these. He's been picked off too many times this year. I think this is one of the knocks of Julio, and I think it's a fair knock and criticism that somewhat of a lack of focus this year with him on the base path. And maybe it's just been like the fact that he's struggled a lot and he's getting in his head, and that is a very human reaction to be distracted when you are struggling. But it just can't happen sometimes. And this one, I'll get into it. It wasn't 100% him being an idiot. It was a little bit of it, but upon further review, it wasn't like he was just absolutely lollygagging out there. There was somewhat of a reason he was a little distracted this time. Still not great. I'm sure all of you know what I'm talking about, but let's paint a picture here. Wednesday night. It's the 10th. It's the 10th inning. Justin Turner had just hit a solo home run in the bottom of the 8th to tie the game up at 1-1. Going into the ninth, the bullpen holds. Colin Snyder comes in and has a common Colin Snyder success in the top of the ninth and blanks the Yankees. The Mariners have an opportunity to win it, and they simply do not. They choose to not walk it off in the ninth, and we go to the 10th inning. And the 10th inning, Colin Snyder stays out there. He gives up a double to Anthony Rizzo, and then gets out of the inning. He gave up one hit, and a run comes in because Rob Manfred's worst rule and worst thing he's ever done as commissioner is the zombie runner. And so there's a man on second base to start the inning. Not an earned run for Colin Snyder. Colin Snyder gives up one double and then gets three outs, and still the Mariners are losing because of that, because of the zombie runner. Again, the worst rule ever made, ever conceived in all sports. That's a take. I hate it. I hate it so much. Not even just because they lost this game. I don't care if the Mariners win on the back of the zombie runner. It's stupid. It makes no sense. I don't want to rant about it, but it fires me up. It's just such a stupid rule. It was all about pace of play. And it's like, well, a regulation game, sure. Nine innings is what you care about, pace of play. It's called extra innings because you're having extra baseball on top of your regular baseball. I don't think anyone cares how long extra innings games go. People cared a lot more about how nine inning games went. I could talk for so much longer about this, but I'm not. Okay. Yankees take the lead. It's 2-1. It's 2-1 going into the bottom of the 10th. The Mariners get something going in the bottom of the 10th, and they have runners on first and third with no outs. Runners on first and third with no outs, you say. Wow. And they're down one, so, I mean, you're at least tying the game up, right? Like, even, like, a ground ball, like a weak ground ball can probably get the guy on third home. The guy on third is Julio Rodriguez. He's really fast. So you kind of have everything set up perfectly here to at least tie the ball game and extend the game a little bit. But everyone knows that's not what happens. Everyone knows the Mariners are a social experiment, and they try to push me and every other fan to their absolute limits of sanity. Randy Rosarena strikes out. Strikes out swinging and tosses his bat while striking out, as he does a little too often. A little too often, I feel like he tosses his bat, but it is what it is. He swings out of his shoes, which is part of what makes him great and also part of why he strikes out a lot. He throws his bat, and it almost hits Julio. Julio tries to get out of the way, and then is in a little bit of a tiff on the base path. Thought something. And then gets picked off. And I'm listening to this on radio. So Rick Riz initially wasn't, like, explaining all of that. Rick Riz was like, oh, Randy Rizzo strikes out swinging. I'm like, oh, shoot, man, that stinks. Randy struck out. So now it's one out with first and third. Still a pretty damn good opportunity to score a run and tie the ball game. And then Rick is like, oh, but Julio was picked off at third. And then I tossed my phone. No, I didn't. I can't lie to you. I didn't break my phone. I was about to. I got real mad. I got real freaking mad. Everyone else got mad. I saw everyone on Twitter. Everyone was so mad. Rightfully so. This is a huge spot in the game. Huge spot in your year. You can't turn off on the base path. And to get picked off at third base after a strikeout, I was like, how did that even happen? Like, if it's a strikeout, strikeouts are pretty cut and dry. The guy swung and missed. You can see it happen. Why would you be running to home already and then get picked off? But no. So the bat, as everyone probably has known by or seen by now, and there's been plenty of angles of this, the bat, Randy lets go of his bat. So upon further review and what he said post-game is he was dodging Randy's bat. And in the midst of that, he got caught in the base path and couldn't get back in time. So he was on the left side of the base path, as you are when you were breaking for home or leading off on third base. The bat comes flying at him. He ducks to get out of the way and turns toward the away dugout. So his back is to the pitcher. And at this point, I think he thinks the ball is dead. He thought the play was dead, or it was a foul ball or something, because in the whole chaos of it, it's like when you or trying to dodge a flying bat, you're not thinking about anything else other than get out of the way for at least like a second or two. And then he was just really slow to react after it. And by the time he tried to get back, the third baseman, who freaking was at third base for the Yankees? Not that it really matters. It wasn't Glaber. I think it was Jazz. Jazz was screaming at Austin Wells, like he was screaming to throw it at him, and they just got him. It was a good throw, but just terrible, demoralizing. The video confirmed what Julio said. It was still on him, but he was dodging the bat and just thought it was like a dead ball or something. Got back to the base way too slow and got picked off. So it's a double play. It kills the runner on third. So now Cal Raleigh is on first base, and then Justin Turner strikes out. So game over. Loss 2-1, backbreaking loss on a night. I think the Astros won. I think the Tigers won. I think the Twins won. It was just terrible, terrible loss. This is not 100%, like I said earlier, it's not 100% Julio's fault here, but it's still a good amount his fault. At least he didn't get straight picked off. Like, he was dodging a bat. I understand what happened. But you still, like, he needs to turn around quicker there and realize the ball is in play. Like, when Jazz starts yelling at Austin Wells, Julio needs to scamper back as quick as he can, and he was just a little too late. It was just a little too late by the time he realized the ball was in play, still, technically, and not dead. Brutal. People are killing Julio online for this, let me tell you. They're killing him online. I think I have a lot to say about that. But just really unfortunate. Just a terrible way to lose a game. And then the day before, it's compounded because the day before, Victor Robles, man, he is an agent of chaos. This is why it's the year of the toot plan. This one was terrible. This one was 100% Robles' fault. The Julio one, I don't know what percentage you want to give. It wasn't 100% his fault. He was dodging the bat. I give the bat a little bit of the fault in that ordeal. But Victor Robles, the day before, he's just a pure, unadulterated baseball joker. In a happy joker. He's just, you just never know what he's going to do next, and it could be good or bad. On Tuesday, it was no different. The Yankees took a 2-0 lead in the first inning, and then the Mariners looked to respond. And then Robles gets hit by Luis Gil and then hugs him in the first inning, leading off, which I've literally never seen before, but again, it's Victor Robles. That was only the first crazy, funny thing he did this inning. I guess this next thing wasn't funny. Luis Gil loads the bases with two more walks. And in the process, he does get two outs. But he also gets two more walks. So it's two outs. Bases loaded with Justin Turner at the plate. It's a 3-0 count against Luis Gil. It's a 3-0 count against a guy who walks like 14% of the batters he faces. I don't have his walk rate in front of you, but it's something like that. He leads the league this year in walk rate among qualified starting pitching. If you know anything about Luis Gil, he's effectively wild. It's insanely hard to hit his stuff because he doesn't know where it's going. He's 100% going to walk a run in here. I don't even know if he really tried, he could have put three straight strikes out there. I don't think the bat was going to leave his shoulders at all. And after the third ball, I think he was going to stand there until Luis Gil walked in a run. And then Victor Robles tries to steal home and gets thrown out. Now, to be fair, he was kind of close. Luis Gil wasn't paying the most attention. But holy shit, man. I can't think of a worse time to try to do that in the regular season, in a regular season game, in a very crucial game down the stretch. I mean, I can think of a worse time. Like, if it was the bottom of the ninth and you're down by a run, sure, that's a worse situation. But you get what I'm saying. Like, this is one of the worst, and maybe the worst base running decisions I've ever seen. He's just crazy. He's a crazy man. And if this worked, it would have been insane. If he actually pulled it off, I think we still would be talking about it like it's a ridiculous decision. But at least he would have scored. Just absolutely absurd. Thankfully, it didn't really end up mattering. Like, the Yankees won by nine runs. They won 11-2. And to say stuff like, if they had scored in the bottom of the first, it could have shifted the momentum and they wouldn't have lost the game 11-2. But I don't think people who say that are arguing in good faith at all. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, I don't think that, like, if Robles stayed at third base, I don't think that that would have caused Brian Wu to not get touched up by the Yankees in the ensuing, like, four innings. Maybe Heel walks on a run there. Then maybe Polanco grounds out, and it's 2-1 going into the second. Would that have really changed anything? Maybe Polanco hits a grand slam, and it's 5-2. But would that still have changed the outcome of Brian Wu giving up seven runs? You just can't say for sure. Like, this is not where the Mariners lost this game, but it was ugly. Oh, it was so ugly. An awful base running decision from a guy who makes insane base running decisions. I mean, he had all the confidence in the world. I think he'd stolen like 30 straight bags before this, and seven of those were to third base. He's stolen third a lot with the Mariners. Just unfortunate. Like, I thank God they lost by nine runs instead of like one or two, because then we'd really be dwelling on that decision a lot more than we currently are. Thankfully, Julio did something crazy in the next game anyway, so it's like 24-hour news cycle. We're not talking about this anymore. I am. But with Robles this year, he's been so, so good for this team. He is a huge reason they're even still in the playoff race at all. You have to take the good with the bad. You can't celebrate his crazy steals of third base and bunts for hits. You can't celebrate those chaotic good plays without accepting that there's going to be some chaotic bad plays, and this one was real chaotic bad, real bad. It just comes with the territory of rooting for a guy like that. You just got to take it in stride. So after this, it's just, I mean, fans are angry in general right now with the team, but a lot of folks on the internet are just spewing hate, lots of hate for Julio and Robles. Randy, a little bit too, to be honest with you, and the team as a whole, but I feel like Julio, especially after what happened, people were really like, oh, trade him. Oh, they shouldn't have paid that guy. Oh, he sucks, man. I hate him. And obviously people were saying stuff about Robles too, and Randy as well. Like I said, I mean, Julio's had a lot of moments this year that have, like I said, showed a lack of focus. I think that's definitely a knock on his game. He is 23. I think it's fair that he is having these somewhat amateur-ish, like, big league moments. I think as he gets more big league reps under his belt, he will be better at that part of his game. I think that's a valid criticism. But avoiding, like, Randy's bat and not getting back to base, it was kind of a freak moment. I mean, again, he should have been a little bit more, like, alert because it's such a big spot. But still, like, I think you can have valid criticism without veering into just, like, that guy sucks, we should trade him. The common denominator of all three of those guys, Randy, Julio, and Victor Robles, what do you think the common denominator is? And why a lot of people hate those. They make your classic conservative baseball fan real cranky. And they always will. Even if they're playing well. They will always make, even Mariners fans, your classic, oh, they don't play the game the right way fan. They will always drive that person crazy. And I think part of it is they will always look for reasons to hate on these guys. Because they don't play the game the right way. That's why they will hate on them. I think a lot of the current Julio hate comes from a place of frustration of the team in a year as a whole. I think that's fair. I think it's very human for sports fans to do that. I don't agree with it, but that's just how it goes. And from his fairly disappointing season, which is partly on him and partly on the Mariners for constructing their team surrounded by a 23-year-old who, listen, everyone was expecting, and even himself was expecting him to be better this year, but I talked about it before the season. They built this team on banking on him being like a 6-7 win player every year, and it's just, you can't you can't, nothing's definite in baseball. And we're seeing why that's kind of an issue with the team building this year. But a lot of the hate, I think comes a little bit with a little added racism in there, man, for all three of those guys. Right now, too, it is a safer place to hate on those players. Part of it is because people feel safer on Twitter in general to spew hate from a racist place because of Elon. But with the mood of the team right now, a lot of people are feeling generally better and more entitled to spew hatred and toxicity at these players because more people are in the current headspace to agree with them online. If the team was in a playoff position and Julio did that exact same thing, like if they were three games up right now in the AL West, I think there'd still be these fans focusing on the negative, but there'd be way less engagement because the team's in a good spot. The team is in a bad spot right now and has been for a little while. And so I think the Julio hate, Randy hate, all that, it'll just get more engagement right now, and it tracks. I think there's fair criticism of these players. I'm not going to get into all my criticisms of Julio and some of these other guys right now because the season's not over, and I'm going to wait. Because Julio is not above criticism, but there's a line between fair criticism and needless hate. And when you look at guys, people on the internet hating Julio for a reason, I think people look for a reason to hate him. They will hate him because he's young. He plays the game in a fun way. They paid him a lot of money already. People hate that for whatever reason. Like, oh, what did he do to earn that money? They paid him too early. They paid him too much. He doesn't deserve it. And I think some of that comes from a genuine place of racist hate. I'm not afraid to say that. Like, I think it genuinely comes from there, and it's pretty unfortunate. Again, there's fair criticism, and then there's hate on the internet that comes from a bad place. And I think there's always people, even fans of that team, that will always find a reason to hate a guy like that. Truthfully. These were the same fans that didn't want to acquire Jazz Chisholm because he would have been a, quote, locker room cancer, you know, he's not good for the morale. Those same fans will absolutely be looking for a constant reason to hate Julio Rodriguez and say trade the guy. That's all I'm saying. But that is where I'm going to cut it on that really high note. This episode, we're playing it by ear. You know, I'll probably be back next week. It really all kind of depends on what happens the next week in Texas with this team. I might not be back next week. We'll see. I hope to God they make the playoffs. Like, good Lord. I don't want to be Charlie Brown to the Mariners Lucy and try to kick the football and get hopeful again when so many times they've missed the playoff by a game and a half. I can't do it again. I've resigned myself to thinking they're just going to miss the playoff by 2 to 3 games. That's going to come down to that last series, and there will be no October baseball in Seattle, but I hope so much that I am wrong, but I hope you can understand why I feel like that. But thank you for listening so much. I appreciate it. Hope you have a good rest of your week personally. Don't let the Mariners get you too down. There's a lot of other good things going on in life right now. So, goodbye, and I will leave you with a one hearty Go Mariners.